Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th day of December, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 11 minutes after the hour, we're Sound Bites. And yeah, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off the blues, don't get the blues, kick. You know what I mean.
You want to start off?
I'm having one of those days. I'm just having a day.
CRS?
I'm having a day, okay?
New month?
Yeah, craft. yeah, that's it. I just brushed my teeth and get to a thing.
Well, it's the holidays. Yeah. We'll blame it on the holidays.
And I haven't even had any rum balls yet.
They're coming.
I don't doubt it.
Our show, just so folks know, we won't be on the air December 25th.
Right.
So, you know, build a bridge, get over it. But we will be here on New Year's Day. And right, that's when we will be doing the, since they celebrate the new year, we're going to celebrate with rum balls.
Exactly right. We always do.
Yeah. And we will have the official rum ball show on January 1st.
Not many rum balls because you load them.
Well, yeah, that's the whole purpose.
It is the whole purpose. All right. All right.
I mean, just because it starts melting plastic things around us.
You're right. All right. Yeah. Don't eat rum balls and drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't advise it for anybody.
Right.
One of our customers brought in some rum balls, and they're pretty good too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, you know, like yours, you can only have one an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about right.
Yeah.
All right. The news. There are loads of messaging apps on the market today, and many of these services make a big deal about their security and privacy policies. Now, a newly leaked document has revealed just how much data the FBI can legally obtain from these services. Rolling Stone and Property of the People obtained an FBI document that details exactly what kind of information the Bureau can obtain from various messaging apps with a warrant or subpoena. And it turns out that WhatsApp and iMessage provide the most information. WhatsApp, iMessage, and Line all provide limited message content in response to a legal request from the FBI. Signal, Telegram, Threema, Viber, WeChat, and Wickr don't disclose any message content, though. But the amount of data shared by WhatsApp and iMessage doesn't stop there, and it turns out that limited message content isn't as innocuous as it sounds. WhatsApp will only give basic subscriber records with a subpoena, but a search warrant allows the FBI to grab address book contacts and WhatsApp users who have the target as a contact. A surveillance request will also allow WhatsApp to send the source and destination of messages to the FBI every 15 minutes, but not the message content itself. Using an iPhone and got your WhatsApp messages backed up to iCloud, then the FBI can grab actual message content too, as Apple is required to hand over the iCloud encryption key with a search warrant. However, iMessage only serves up basic subscriber information with a subpoena, but dishes out 25 days of iMessage search queries with a court order. Authorities armed with a search warrant can also make backups of a target's device and see actual messages if the targeted person is using iCloud backups for iMessage. Telegram and Signal are two services with more significant limitations on what can legally be handed over to the FBI. Telegram doesn't offer message content at all, nor does it typically provide contact information. The FBI document, however, adds that Telegram may disclose IP addresses and phone numbers to authorities for confirmed terrorist investigations. Signal doesn't provide message content either, but does offer the date and time a user registered on the service and the last date it connected to the platform. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what messaging app do you use? And your choices are WhatsApp, iMessage, Signal, Telegram, WeChat, plain old texting, shouting, and other. So far, we've got about 21 votes, and plain old texting, not shockingly for our listeners, is number one. Followed, not shockingly, by shouting.
What?
I said shit.
Huh?
If you said other, or if you have more to say, and I know you do, head on over to our website at soundbites.org. First, in the upper left corner, you'll see the poll. Click on that and take the poll, please. And then scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is for December 21. Messaging apps, give your info to the FBI. We've got a couple of people who've put messages in so far, but please do so. And then, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. There are a lot of messaging apps out there, and many of them purport at least to be secure. Most of them are not. That is also true of many of the video chat services that purport to be.
Yeah, because how are most folks going to verify it?
Right.
They could sell them the moon.
Well, it depends on how you define secure.
Yeah.
They are encrypted from you to the other end, going through the server in the middle, which can decrypt and read all your stuff.
Oh, right. Minor technicality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we up on YouTube?
Yeah, YouTube is up, yeah.
Really? Okay, if you say so. Anyway.
I'm kidding. I was having trouble with Facebook.
There it is.
Now I got it.
There it is. Okay. We're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Matt from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Nick? I recently discovered podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't want to steal your guys' lightning or thunder.
Yeah.
But would you mind if I shared a computer show on the air that's a podcast that's
sure.
not a call-in show?
Sure.
Okay, so I heard this show. It's called Grumpy Old Geeks, and one of these guys is from Canada, too. It's hilarious, and recently discovering podcasts. There's a lot of good information out there on these things.
Excellent. You know I will I check mean? It out.
GOG.show.
GOG.show.
It's the Gaga show.
And one of them's from Canada. And like unlike you guys, because they're in a public airwaves, they could actually swear and cuss on the show, which is kind of hilarious hearing people talk about like getting mad at computers. Because, I mean, a few times you probably wanted to say a few choice words to them, too, you know.
That's why they call them cursors.
Yeah,
I just figured I'd share that with the podcast thing, and I encourage everybody to watch podcasts. And if you want to get smarter two times faster, you could always put it on two times the speed. It sounds like you're talking like mice, but yeah. It's pretty funny to catch up on all your info.
All right, excellent. Thanks, Matt.
All right, you have a nice day and a weekend, guys. Bye.
You too. Thanks. Good information. Yeah, there are lots of good podcasts out there.
Mm-hmm.
For all kinds of things.
Oh.
Back in the day when I had a 20, 30 minute trip to
that four letter word.
I used to listen to podcasts fairly regularly. And if you have unlimited data or you download it to your phone ahead of time, you can do that pretty easily. Lots of podcasting software out there.
And what's getting interesting now is that traditional media companies are getting into podcasting, realizing there's money involved.
Money.
Was it Joe Rogan got bought by Spotify for $100 million?
Yeah.
Some ridiculous amounts of money that companies are paying for Spotify. And a lot of the podcast purists are mad about it because podcasts in general are a computer feed. And one of the networks I watch a lot is This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte. They have Mac shows and Windows shows and all sorts of shows. Dick DiBartolo from Mad's Maddest Writer, does a gadget show called The Giz Whiz, and that's pretty cool. But he doesn't do any tracking on the podcast links, because when you download a podcast, a lot of the shows will send it through a podcast tracking service because advertisers want to know who's listening. And when podcasting technology was set up, it was just you download it. There's no way to know who's listening, how long they listened, where they started, where they finished. But advertisers want that kind of data now. So big companies like Spotify and some of the other I think iHeartRadio and
Most of the big companies,
yeah, they are starting to get into podcasts now. They want all that data. So what they're starting to do is you need to use their player to play these podcasts, and they're starting to charge for podcasts. A lot of podcasters will have like a Patreon fee fund so that they can get paid for their work and their equipment. But now we're starting to see paid podcasts coming out where you can't listen to it without paying the subscription fee. And that was always a big thing about podcasts is that they were all free. And so by requiring you to use their custom player, they can track all sorts of information about you, where you listened to it, because a lot of people listen on their phones, how long you listened, you know, what you skipped. And the advertisers are getting way too much data already, and now we're giving them more.
Right. I do track how many people downloaded our podcast every week, but that's all I track. And I don't know who you are. I only know that somebody downloaded the podcast.
Yeah.
And that's all I know. And that's, of course, not everybody. Because if you download it from iTunes or whatever, I don't have those data. I don't think. Maybe I do.
Yeah, that comes from your server.
Okay, then I do. But we have many hundreds, many, many hundreds of people who listen to the podcast every week. Our average is, I think, 500 and change a week, which is not, you know, compared to the big guys, not much at all, but yeah, certainly a decent amount.
And most of those are not going through Apple Podcast.
Right.
So you should have those data too, but I can look up from the Apple Podcast Connect how many people are getting it from iTunes or now the podcast app directly through Apple.
Right. But yeah, so we know that people like podcasts. Not everybody has a Saturday from noon to two free. And I know that there are people I've talked to who listen while they jog or whatever. Mm-hmm. So
some places will call it audio on demand or video on demand.
Right. It's the same time shifting you do with VCRs and, yep, you know, back in the day. So, yeah. And streaming services now. It's all about time shifting now.
Yeah. And when you try and when you happen to be watching live something, you try to hit that fast forward and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Why can't I fast forward a live show? Because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so we're always quite pleased when people are downloading the podcast. We also know that many of them don't become members of the station, but that's a separate issue for a separate day. We're still pleased that they're listening to the show, so that's nice. So don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's Aronicoid Day. We had Matt, now we've got Rich. Hi, Rich, what's up?
Hi, guys. Happy Saturday.
Same to you. What's up?
Just maybe you can help me understand a little bit here. I guess I'm a little off on knowing about Office 360 or the Office suite itself.
Right.
The fire department I'm with is looking to upgrade or whatever their office software or that type of stuff. And I guess one of my questions is, how does the Office 360 work? We have like 30 users. And or would I still be able to go by Office 2021 and maybe get a license for each machine type of thing? What's your guys' take on all that?
The applications are identical between the different things. It's just a different way to license it. So,
okay.
So they still make a single user license, which is $150 per computer.
Okay.
And if you have a lot of computers, that can be expensive. And then they have their Office 365 personal subscription that's $70 a year. And you can install it on any number of your own devices. So if you have a desktop, a laptop, and a phone, you can install it three times on your own device.
Okay.
Then there's the standard tier, which is $100 a year for five different people. And a lot of families will use that, mom, dad, and the kids.
Now, is that something that if we were to do that, say, five employees, and could each employee use it at the same time?
Yes, five at a time.
My big question would be, you know, since it is a fire department and they're always trying to find ways to cut costs and everything else, why not look into LibreOffice, which is, free?
Yeah, that was one of the other things, was just switching over to something like that, or even going with, we have the Google Suite, or I forgot what they call it now.
Right.
It's also free, yeah.
Yeah, which is also free. And everyone does have a Google account with an email.
There you go.
For the organization. So it's just, I guess it's the of what we're used to using and going. I know that myself, I like using the Google Suite for some of my things, but I can always find the thing in an office that I might want to do, but can't find it in the Google Suite to be able to do it the same way.
Right.
The features are there, but they are done a little differently.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that, like, in the spreadsheet software, in Sheets, there's not a lot of the function of some of the things that I do using Excel.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably there. You just don't know where to find them or what they're called because they have different names.
Right, and I've Googled some of that, and they say they don't have that feature yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, type of thing. So
for a fire department, you're sort of in that transition period that Microsoft has, middle period. Microsoft has home users licenses, and they have business user licenses. Their basic business user is $5 per user per month, so $60 a year per user.
Okay.
But as a government and likely a nonprofit, there is a often a discount for government and nonprofit options that you might be able
especially
to look
fire
into.
Department, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. First so responders.
We'd probably have to go through our IT vendor or computer business and let them research the idea of what avenue we should go down with cost-wise on an office suite.
Yeah, because I know you're tax-exempt.
Yes, we are.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, just to confuse you even more, there's a thing called Microsoft 365.
Okay.
Which is separate from Office 365.
Yeah, that's going to include the Windows OS.
Right, that's going to include Windows, and it's also going to include security software and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, see, and I know that some of that stuff we've already got, or there our IT business outside our place that we work with has our, security stuff set up or whatever it is. I don't know exactly. I'm not that far into it, but, I don't know. It's just I thought I'd call you guys and just see what your take was on it and again, there's always the free stuff or LibreOffice, which, yes, I've used also. So I just thought I'd get your take and be able to take that back to our people.
Yep.
What branch are you out of, Rich? I'm just curious.
I volunteer for Ridge Culver in Irondequoit.
Okay, cool.
And I also work for the Fishers Fire District out near Eastview Mall.
Well, thank you for your service.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you for thanking me.
There's kind of an interesting dichotomy that individual users don't like paying subscriptions. You know, every year you got to keep paying, and if you stop paying, the programs stop working.
Mm-hmm.
But businesses like subscriptions because it's a known quantity.
Yep.
Right.
We can budget $99 a year, and you'll never have to worry about it again. And you always get the next version for free as part of the subscription.
Right. Well, the one that you were talking about with Microsoft 360, would that, include, and I don't know when they want to do this or whatever, but upgrade to Windows 11?
Yeah, hold on a minute. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
But stay on the line, and we'll come right back to you and explain a little bit about Microsoft Business 365. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Rich from Irondequoit, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We still have Rich from Miranda Coit on the phone. Still there, Rich?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so the $5 a month license for Microsoft 365 Business Basic, it's an annual commitment and it auto-renews. So in your case, that'd be, like I said, $60, like Steve said, $60 a year per person. Mm-hmm. It includes web and mobile versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, plus Microsoft Teams, Exchange, OneDrive, and SharePoint. But the desktop versions of Office apps are not included.
Okay. All right. So it's just a mobile version then.
Mobile and web.
Web type. Okay. But now, couldn't I use that on my desktop by going to the web?
Yes, yes, yes. You just don't get the standalone click on an icon versions.
And okay. And technically, the web versions are free.
Yeah, you can use the web versions for free.
Yeah.
You just don't get all the other stuff.
All the Microsoft Cloud stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, you guys, again, great information, and I'll probably use the podcast to take it back to my people so they could hear what you have to say and go from there. And, again, I appreciate it. And if I don't talk to you, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Take care.
Have fun. I think, Steve, did you publish a – did you – on our website – Steve has put up a link comparing all the Microsoft 365 plans. So you can also see all of them there. So that'll be easy. I don't need this tab open anymore, so I'm closing it. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Jack did from Ontario, New York. Hiya, Jack. What's up?
Hi. How's you doing? Look, I got a decision to make. I got an iMac 2017. It's a 3-in-1 desktop. It's a Mac OS Monterey. And it's a spinning drive, okay? And so we went to the Mac store and made an appointment, so they're telling us that, hey, look, it's a spinning drive. Now they have solid-state machines, okay? So we decided, hey, look, it's the later part of it might be our last computer, okay? So, and this was done in 2017 when we bought this one, and it's pretty slow. So we decided to get the upgrade. So you can't go to the store anymore and like they used to do, okay? I mean, you know, they have classes. So when we the computer is coming, my point is this here. Do I start fresh or should I transfer everything I got from our original computer? And I mean, there's a lot of stuff on there that we don't need, but I don't know what to do. I mean, any ideas or?
Well, that's always the big question, and it depends on how much work you want to do afterwards. So you can transfer everything and delete the stuff you don't want, or you can start from scratch and then have to reinstall everything that you do want.
Okay.
If you don't use many third-party programs, just Apple programs, then they would be included on the new machine. So just transferring your documents is probably enough to get you up and running on the new machine.
Okay.
When this documents and in, photos, right?
And that's all. That's part of the documents folder, yeah.
I didn't.
I just moved the documents folder over.
Yeah, and when you turn the new machine on, it'll ask if you want to migrate all your data from your old machine, and there's a program called the Migration Assistant that will do that for you.
Right, and when it comes in, they give me a phone number that I can call someone, but, you know, sometimes it's just, I mean, most of the people out there know what they're doing. But, you know, I got photos and everything else, but I'm trying to get rid of AOL. I've had it since day one, and I don't seem to be able to get it, and if I started with a fresh machine, if I don't put AOL on there, what happens?
Well, it depends on what you mean by AOL. Are you using an AOL email address or the AOL website?
Yeah, email address.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the computer. That's your email service. You would have to sign up with a new email service.
Oh, I have to change. Oh.
And then tell everyone your new email address, which is a horrible pain. It's it's worse than physically moving because there's just one post office to tell. Yeah.
There's some people that I've been telling, hey, look, I changed my email address to Gmail.
Yep.
But they keep on sending it. And I mean, so the bottom line is this here.
Well, I was going to say,
you can set up a what do they call it?
Port forward.
Well, no, I'm thinking a rule. What do they call it in AOL or in Gmail? Because Matt calls them rules, actions.
Yeah, something.
So
yeah.
If a message comes in on your AOL address, you can send a message back saying, "Stop using this address. Here's my new address."
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you know, if they call you and say, "Hey, you're not answering my email," go remind them again. Just go ahead, you know, because some folks are very lazy and they're not going to, well, yeah, I can't be bothered with that. They keep using your old email address. Well, if they can't take the time, you know, well, the heck with them. If it's that important, they'll call you.
Yeah, like my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pushing 80 almost. So this is not a big deal.
You're in their address book, and that's the only one they use. They don't want to bother changing their address book.
Yep.
So should we transfer everything? I think I got it now. Maybe I'll just transfer it over and then delete the stuff.
Yeah,
there you go.
One of the things that I will frequently do for people who've had their computer a long time and you've migrated from computer to computer to computer, you can transfer just your user folder, which is all your documents, all your photos, all your mail and everything, and not transfer the old applications. Because they're old and may not work on the new computer.
Might slow the machine down?
And could be slowing the machine down with all that extra cruft that you don't use anymore.
Yeah.
So turn off transferring applications, and then you can reinstall any third-party application you want if you're using any.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I'm going to say it's 2017. It was not a big deal. I mean, some people have their computers for 10, 15 years, you know? But I don't have enough time looking at that spinning thing all day long, you know what I mean? It just doesn't work out. My last question is this here. We got a ton of passwords that are, like, written down and then crossed off another password on the sheets there. We are so confused. Is there a really good password place, or should I use it at all or start all over with passwords?
If you are all Apple products, phone and computer, then the Apple keychain built into every device will save all your passwords for you. It will even suggest new passwords when you need to set up for a new account. And that's built into the system and free, and you're probably already using it. If you've ever told a website to save your password, it's being saved in the keychain.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you can go into the keychain access program in the utilities folder to see all those saved passwords.
Yeah, and can you make them complex?
Yes.
That's the key.
Yeah, and it will generate complex passwords for you. In fact, they changed their wording a little bit a couple systems ago, and so now it says use strong password. And it was too strong. It was 25 characters long.
And a lot of sites won't take that.
Yeah, so now they dropped it to 15.
That's ridiculous.
I
remember you mentioned about some program that, and my wife tried to do it, and it was very, very confusing for passwords. And I'm not going to, you know, I know you pay for it and everything else. But
yeah, there are third-party password managers, KeyPass and 1Pass and NPass. And they're handy if you're cross-platform as well. So they'd run on Mac and Windows and Android. But if you're Apple only for Macs and iPhones and iPads, then it's easiest just to use the built-in password manager that they come with.
Well, I also have an HP and old one that I use for my little games or something. So is there a password program that you gentlemen seem to like over other
horses? We tend to like NPass.
ENPASS.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
There you go. Thanks.
Hey, thank you so much, and you made my day.
Thanks. Have fun, Jack.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, moving to a new machine is often difficult.
Oh, pain.
Apple does make it pretty easy with the migration tool.
Yep. It'll also transfer from a Windows machine, so if you're crossing platforms too, which is tricky sometimes.
Often, yeah. It won't move programs, of course.
Right.
but it will move data, which is really the important thing.
And your mail. So mail and photos are the two big things.
Yeah. That's the hard one.
Yeah. Although on the other side, 2017 shouldn't be that slow.
No, it shouldn't be.
If he's getting a lot of beach balls, which is the spinning cursor, which is the weight cursor, it's like the hourglass on Windows, there may be something wrong with the computer.
Right.
And then we see that in our shop all the time. Do I repair this one or do I fix this one or do I buy a new one?
Right.
And
that's a very tough.
I remember my dad wrestling that with the car when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Do we put $500 into fixing it or do I take that $500 and put it toward a new computer? Yeah. A new car.
Yeah. We do the same thing. I've got a dollar amount in my head. If my next repair costs more than that,
yep,
it's time for a new car.
He mentioned his age. We had an 80-something-year-old woman came in and bought a computer, and she joked with us, it's going to be my last computer. Comes in 5 years later and buys another one.
Yeah.
Never say never.
Yep.
Many, 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 many decades ago when I was selling Osborne ones, a woman came in and bought three of them. I said, what are you going to do with three of them? She said, this is the last computer I'm ever going to buy. Once I learn it, I'm done. So I now have three of them. Two of them will sit in the closet. If this one dies, I pull out a new one and start using that. When that one dies, I pull out the third one and start using that. When that one dies, I die. Okay. She was 85 at the time, so I suspect the computer's outlived her.
Probably had still one spare at least.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, people don't like changing. People don't like it at all. I back up everything in at least two places. So if I, and of course, because I use Linux, all the programs I use are free. And there's a little utility that will show me the list of every program I've installed. I can save that to a file, which I back up. I can then bring that file back and say to Linux, here's the list of all the programs I want. Install them. And because they're all free and it's all, that's easy. Super easy. But for Windows, it's much harder. And for Apple, it's harder unless you know about the migration tool.
And it asks you when you first turn it on, and people are often so busy to hit next, they don't click on this. Yes, I do want to transfer all my stuff.
Well, they get click happy.
Yeah.
Yep. So you want to be aware that you have the opportunity when you buy a new Mac to transfer data from the old machine. Do you need a particular cable or any sort of?
Well, if you have a Thunderbolt or depending if your machine's old enough, FireWire cable, it will do it directly. But it can do it over your network, over Wi-Fi, over Ethernet.
There you go. So you can do
it. All dressed up and ready to go.
Yep.
I was really, and a lot of other people were really mad when Microsoft stopped including their file systems and transfer wizard.
Oh yeah.
So you cannot copy all your old stuff to your new Windows PC.
Yeah, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, what I've found online is it still exists in Windows 7. So you download the version for 7, works fine in 10.
Yeah.
And you can still use it.
Well, of course, Microsoft wants you to use all of the online stuff.
Yeah, well, they want you to buy a Laplink cable. Remember those parallel?
Oh, Lordy, I remember those.
Yeah, cable to cable. But, and they give you a discount on purchasing that software with your new PC. But they have enough money.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is John from Fairport, New York. Hi, John. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. I'm interested in actually having the marquee tool appear inside of Firefox under Ubuntu. So I went to the internet, and it tells you kind of how to do that in YouTube, and it referred me to GitHub. And so I went there, and it shows a program called Ksnip. And when I go to download it, well, you go to GitHub, and there you click on download, and all these files come up. Which one is the executable? It's not like Windows.
Well, you need all of them, generally speaking, unless it's a text thing.
Of them are executable. They want you to compile it yourself?
Maybe. It depends. I don't know what the marquee tool is.
Well, you know how in Windows you can can use the snipping tool and you can capture whatever you want on the screen. Well, KSNIP supposedly does that same thing, and that's what I'm looking to do. It's like a screen grabber.
Screen scrape,
you know.
Yeah.
And KSNIP does that, but with all these files, Steve just mentioned you need a compiler. So how come GitHub doesn't say, hey, you know, you need this other program to get all these files into Ubuntu?
Well, because GitHub is a code repository, so they give you the code, and what you do with it is your own business.
Yeah, some of them will. Some of them have some form of executable, but not always.
Now, was it apt-get KSNIP?
Right. Have you tried Lightshot?
No, I haven't tried that. I should write that down.
Yeah.
All right. So is that from a different location, or
it's an add-on? It's an extension for Firefox.
Okay.
It is a screenshot tool. You can make any selected area, video, flash.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking to capture website data, kind of like pictures, if you will, that have embedded text, and then I can put it in an email, and I can send it to a buddy and say, "Hey, you should check this out." You know, as opposed to just taking the URL and putting it into the email.
Sure.
Yeah, so Lightshot is an extension for Firefox.
Right.
Does it provide that angled, like, tool that lets you start, say, in the upper left corner and drag it to the lower right?
Yes.
Okay, that's like the marquee tool. Okay. I'm just using the marquee tool as a description. That's what it's using.
Right. So, yeah, okay. It you get a choice, as with many of these. You can say there's actually a tool for Linux, and I use it every day, and now I can't think of the name because I made an icon. But it does the same thing. You can say, I want to select the whole screen, or I want to select a window, or I want to select an area. And if you say area, then you paint it, right, upper left to lower right.
Yes.
And then you could do that. And that's also a built-in tool in Ubuntu? Linux, in Ubuntu itself. So,
okay.
So G something. Hold on.
Okay.
There's all kinds of ways to do that.
Not dependent upon my version, is it? I have 20.0.4.3 LTS for Ubuntu.
Yeah, that's okay. It shouldn't be a problem.
Oh, okay.
Well, apparently there's a screenshot tool built into Firefox, too.
Well, I can't find it.
Control-Shift-S.
F like Frank or S like Sam?
S like screenshot.
Oh, okay. Control-Shift and then S like Sam.
Yeah.
Geez, that's really helpful. All right. Well, hey, I'll give it a shot. I like all these ideas.
There's also you can customize your toolbar to add the screenshot tool to it, which looks like a little pair of scissors.
Yeah.
To take a snip of the screen.
Firefox did have something like that. I think it was like a few years ago. And then I updated Firefox, and the thing disappeared. I'm like, what a great tool
wait a minute.
That is.
That was the Mac instructions. The Linux instructions is Control-Shift-S.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Command-Shift-S on the Mac.
Yeah. Okay.
Control-Shift-S on Linux.
Well, I had a Mac also. Yeah, Steve, you would recognize me. I was part of Apple Cider for a while as a member.
Ah.
Yeah.
And under Linux, I believe it's actually pre-installed in Ubuntu. It's called, shockingly, the GNOME screenshot app.
So that will take the whole Windows screen.
Well, you get a choice.
The whole Linux desk rather than a screen.
Right.
Or a window or a region.
Right. So, you have a choice of grab the whole screen, grab the current window, or select the area to grab. And then you can even add a delay, which I use all the time. Because when I'm writing technical documents, I need to be able to see, you know, pull down a menu and point to something.
Delayed capture. So whole screen, delayed capture, and portion of a screen are the options. Is that right?
Whole screen, current window, area, select an area, or select after a delay. And then you can decide whether or not to include the pointer or the window borders, and then there are effects you can apply. It's a whole thing.
Okay, so how do you get that GNOME screenshot app?
It should be in. I don't have a Linux machine in front of me, but it should be under accessories.
Oh, accessories. Okay, so check accessories. I can also do a search. All right, very good.
Right.
All right. Well, you've given, all of you have given me really good ideas. Thank you so much.
All right.
Yeah, lots to go on. All right. Take care of yourselves, gentlemen.
You too.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep.
We were just joking the other day at the office. The oldest key combination that still exists in the Mac is Command-Shift-3 to take a screenshot.
Nice.
In the early days, it printed it, because that's all you could do. There was nowhere to save the file.
Right, right.
So, I still use...
Because you were working on very limited floppy disks.
Yeah. I use Snagit.
Oh, yeah. Snagit is nice.
Yeah, because you can. It's got a lot of features in it that you can do, you know, select the area, whether you want to create a movie out of it or just simple snapshot. You can do, you know, because sometimes instructions go many screens.
Yeah.
Or what you're trying to capture, you know, and it allows you to select the area and print it off.
Right. I think the file is called G Screenshot, I think.
Looks like Snagit went commercial at $63.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, again, if...
no, but it says free download.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the download is always
free. Yeah, that always gets me.
Yeah. But yeah, I use that screenshot tool constantly when I'm writing manuals.
Yep.
Speaking of which, you know, and we've been with the holiday season coming up, another gift idea which I was thinking about is, you know, some of the folks are looking for ideas to give somebody is, you know, whether you buy them, say, a subscription to Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, NPass, or all these different...
Or Jazz 90.1.
Yeah. I mean, these different programs that, you know, you take advantage of and use all the time, even us, you know, support us because, you know, we're here to help you. Like I say, the only time we take off usually is either Christmas or New Year's. Matter of fact, this year, we're even going to be here on New Year's Day. So
that's right.
We're only taking Christmas off. So if you're looking for different ideas, you can... go with that and support other programs because a lot of developers, I hate to say it, but there's been a lot of programs out there that have literally gone by the wayside.
Yep. Orphan programs.
Yeah, because nobody supported them. Like Revo Uninstaller. I love that program. It does such a great job, and they've got a sale on it right now if you get it for the Christmas season. You can get 2 years. I think it's for like $29 or so. But things like that, you know, are gifts that make somebody else's life easier, and they'll thank you all the time. Like, oh, yeah, you got that for me. It's in their face, and they're using it all the time. So, hey, it's a gift that keeps on giving.
There was a guy named Jim Knopf, also named Jim Button, because Knopf is button in German, started a company called Buttonware, and he had a whole bunch of programs, and it was Shareware, called Shareware in those days.
Yep.
Instead of anything, I've still got the letter. He sent me a letter back, and he said, holy cow, nobody's ever paid me for this before. This is great. I may be the first person who ever paid for Shareware.
Well, there's another program I use in my ham thing. It's Log for Old Men. And it's free. And the guy is in England, and he's got a lot of great features for it, but he keeps upgrading it and everything else. And, you know, is doing great things with it. So I sent him, you know, a donation. He goes, oh, you're the first one I've gotten in quite a while. I go, well, hey, if I'm going to use it and it's helpful, I believe in paying for it.
Yep. I pay for programs all the time. I sent a guy a donation. He wasn't asking. Sent him a donation. He wrote back and he said, thank you, but I don't know what to do with this. I said, spend it.
Buy beer.
That's what it's for. That's right. All right, that music tells us our first hour is done. But do not go too far, because we've got a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right, another hour of Dave Evanwright, I'm sorry to say another hour of Steve Ray, and another hour of Nick Francesco, and another hour of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break, and then come on back, because we've got a whole nother hour of sound bites right here on the truly great and grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. While you do that, I will read what to me was the most interesting story of the week. The world has a data problem. We create another 2.5 terabytes, that's 2.5 million gigabytes of data every single day. And each year, the amount of data produced globally increases exponentially. This puts us on a collision course with a serious problem. The rate at which we produce data is outpacing our ability to store them. If every YouTube video we watched, every photo we snapped from our phone, and every document we saved was stored on traditional flash memory chips, it would consume 10 to 100 times the expected supply of silicon by 2040 if we stripped every beach in the world. We still run out of silicon by 2040. What's clear is that we need another way to store data, and not just any way. The data storage method of the future needs to be robust and dense. That is, the data currently being stored in data centers the size of football fields needs to be placed in a much smaller vehicle. And that solution needs to transfer data quickly and store our most prized media for decades without causing it to break down, which is the other problem with current media. They don't last. What are we looking at to find this holy grail of data storage? Well, we're looking in the molecule that houses our genetic information, DNA. Where hard drives use ones and zeros, DNA storage uses four chemical bases, adenine, or A, guanine, or G, cytosine, or C, and thymine, or T. Remember elementary school science class? I don't know about you. Maybe you didn't take genetics in elementary school science class.
Or the Gattaca movie.
Yep. These compounds connect in pairs, A to T, G to C, to create rungs on a double helix ladder. Turns out you can use DNA to convert ones and zeros into those four letters, the connections between them, for storing complex data. Microsoft, one of the pioneers of DNA storage, is making some headway working with the University of Washington's Molecular Information Systems Laboratory, or MISL. The company announced in a new research paper the first nanoscale DNA storage writer, which the research group expects to scale for a DNA write density of 25 times 10 to the 6 sequences per square centimeter, or three orders of magnitude. For the enumerate, that's 1,000 times more tightly packed than before. What makes this particularly significant is that it's the first indication of achieving the minimum write speeds required for DNA storage. What do these advantages mean in real-world terms? Well, the International Data Corporation predicts data storage demands will reach 9 zettabytes by 2024. That's a lot.
You think?
As Microsoft notes, only one zettabyte of storage would be used if Windows 11 were downloaded on 15 billion devices, which it's pretty close to. Using current methods, those data would need to be stored on millions of tape cartridges. Cut the tape and use DNA, and 9 zettabytes of information can be stored in an area as small as a refrigerator. Some scientists say every movie ever released could fit in a footprint of a sugar cube.
Whoa.
But perhaps a freezer would be a better analogy, because data stored on DNA can last for thousands of years, where data loss occurs on tape within 30 years and even sooner on SSDs and HDDs. That's why you have more than one backup, because any drive can die at any time.
Yep.
So are you ready to store all your data on the head of a pin? Give us a call, 585-next to the Dancing Angels. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. 1-5.
Then we can all be Johnny Mnemonic.
Yes, we could. Exactly how that works. You know, the we've said this many, many times. There are a lot of theories and predictions and scientific papers about how long drives last. Well, Google did it empirically. They bought a couple of billion drives and saw how long they lasted.
Yep.
And they discovered that the average hard drive, the mean time between failure for a hard drive is 5 years. And the same is true for SSDs.
They fail differently, but they still fail.
They still fail.
Everything. And the it's meantime, an electronic product.
Yeah, but
right. The mean time between failure means that some drives, being 5 years, means that some drives last 10 years and some die out of the box, but most of them are somewhere in the middle. So how old are your hard drives and how close are they to failing?
I always equated it to like a light bulb. You know a light bulb's only going to last so long. It doesn't give you a warning until you go to flip it on, and all of a sudden it goes real bright, and then pop, it goes. One thing, which, again, leads to your saying a backup, backup, backup. I had four different folks call me. They tried to upgrade to Windows 11.
Ran into problems. No.
They are so sorry, and two of them, guess what?
Their whole machines are hosed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And?
They have no backup.
You got it.
Yep, yep, yep. You know what? I just had that happen to me this week. I have an old laptop that I put Linux on, and I went to upgrade it, and I don't know if the hard drive failed or what happened, but now all of a sudden I get this error message I've never seen before. It says, attempt to write outside HD0. I don't know what that means yet. I just said, you know, it's an extra laptop. I was just playing around with it. I had nothing that really mattered on it. Nothing I can't recreate in about an
HD0
hour.
HD0 was your first hard drive.
Your primary hard drive.
Tried to write outside HD0 storage is what it said.
Yep.
It's like your HD1.
Yes, I don't know what it was trying to get to, but it couldn't get there. So I'll maybe play around with a different operating. This is my opportunity to put a different operating system on it, Zorin or something else that people are all hot for right now. Play around with that.
Backblaze, which is another online backup company.
Yep.
They release similar statistics. So they have 194,749 drives in operation.
Nice.
They give these really cool charts on the make and model of the drive and how long it's lasted. And so they are coming out with very similar statistics from what Google has seen.
Yeah.
It kind of boils down to about 20% failure rate per year.
Yep.
So the first year you own your drive, there's a 20% chance of failing. Second year, 40%. But, you know, by the fifth year, there's a 100% chance it's going to fail.
That's exactly right. So how old are your hard drives?
One thing I wanted to point out on one of them. Folks, when you sit there and see another partition on the same drive, granted it's a different letter, this laptop only has this, in this case, it happened to be a laptop, only one hard drive in it. That's not a backup hard drive, that other partition. So once you go and format the drive, you've wiped out that other partition.
Yep.
Because it's just a different part of the same hard drive.
Yeah, so don't get confused. You got to see literally, and if you have doubts, check with other folks, you know, a computer shop. So you don't make that mistake of wiping out everything, and then you come crying into them, pleeding, "Oh, I got to get this data back," and they can't help you.
It was on my D drive. There's two drives, right? No. Very few laptops have two physical drives.
That's exactly right. Let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
Hello. I have a Pixel 3 phone, and I'm trying to transfer my photographs to my laptop. Now, I did it a long, long time ago, and when I plugged everything in, it came in with a screen that I can pick and transfer. But now, that doesn't appear, and if I go to the icon, my Pixel icon on my desktop, where it says import the pictures, it says it can't find them. Now, do I have this thing locked somewhere? My picture's locked?
There's two.
What do I do?
There's two ways that the phone will recognize a cable when you plug it in, as a charging only cable, or also as a file transfer cable. So you have to make sure you go into your settings and have it set to be file transfer, so that the computer sees it as a basically as a drive to copy your files from.
Okay, so now say that, I go to my settings.
The settings on the phone, yes.
Okay, is it the same physical cable?
Most of the time, but there are some cables that are charging only. Yeah, I found the Google one.
Yes, yeah,
is that where you are? Yeah. Some cables are charging only, so and cannot transfer data. And a lot of people like using those in public, so you can plug into an unknown charger and not risk your data getting sucked off.
Yeah, well, this worked before. So I go to settings, and then I look for...
It says there's a charging this device via USB notification, and under USB, it should say you use file transfer.
Okay. Okie doke. I'll give it a try.
Yeah. Steve has found...
I can say sometimes it asks you that when you first plug the cable
in. Yeah, I was going to say normally
it'll pop up and ask you how you want to do it.
Yeah, right.
I know it. That's exactly why I'm calling, because that used to pop up, but now it doesn't pop up anymore.
Right, now may have to do it by hand.
Yeah, with Windows updates, it might have changed something.
Or an Android update.
Android update. Steve has posted a link to the article on Pixel Phone Help from Google on how to do that.
Well, I got the one from Google itself.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. I each week I wait for this program to solve my problems.
Thanks.
Tell your friends.
Okay.
Tell your enemies,
thanks
too.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
And hopefully we don't generate new ones.
Exactly. And become a member, for Pete's sake. That's why we're here. The ability to move data is possible through... cable or wireless. You can do it right over Wi-Fi if you're connected, or Bluetooth. Just slow, but certainly works.
Or you should be able to set up Google Photos on the phone to automatically transfer to Google Photos on your computer.
Google Photos or Amazon Prime Photos.
Yeah.
Because but if you're already a Prime member, you get unlimited storage.
And they updated their Mac client, so now you can say Photos only, and give it your whole photo library and not have to pull out your videos separately.
Oh,
because
nice.
It's limited to how many videos it uploads.
Right. Only 5 gig of video.
So now I've got my 75,000 photos
Thank
uploaded.
Thank heaven. All right, back to the phone.
I'm trying to delete them from Google because I keep getting the Google Drive warning out of space. Yeah. I can't get them deleted from Google.
Well, that's a separate issue.
I suppose it's good that they're hard to delete accidentally and hard to delete on purpose.
Back to the phones. Hi there. What's your name?
Hi, my name is Purnima.
Okay, and what are you? Where are you calling from?
Rochester.
Okay, what's up?
So I'm thinking about buying some Raspberry Pis for some class I teach. And I was wondering if, you know, if the students take it home, do they need their own monitors, or can they plug it into their Chromebook and use like a display from an existing computer they have? Do you know about that?
I do. Go ahead.
I'm going to say an existing computer, yes, but not a Chromebook, because that's not a separate monitor.
Right.
So if they have a separate monitor or a television.
I see. But can you connect it to like a MacBook or a Windows machine and use that display as a monitor?
Well,
no.
There are ways to do it with programs like VNC and things like that, but it's not easy and it's complex.
Okay.
So you kind of the technical answer is yes.
Okay.
The real answer is not so much.
I was saying the easiest way to do it, if you're getting a new Raspberry Pi 4, would buy, you know, have them just the simplest is just get an HDMI cable and hook it up to their TVs, because most TVs nowadays have at least one HDMI port.
That makes sense. Great.
You know, and the cables are what, maybe $20?
Yeah. Great. Makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I got to say, when you're using a Raspberry Pi, it's very inexpensive comparatively to dang near anything else you can buy. It's powerful compared to $200 and $300 laptops. It's about as powerful as they are.
Yeah. nowadays.
And they'll do everything because it's a full Linux computer. You know, even the 4 gig models do a lot, and the 8 gig models, obviously, you can run multiple programs simultaneously, and et cetera, you can, I know a number of people who use one as a second desktop, or, you know, as a desktop replacement. If your choice is to buy, even a $250 or $300 laptop versus a $100 Raspberry Pi, and you've already got the monitor, which way do you want to go? It's ridiculous, yeah. You know? Or you can get the Raspberry Pi 400, which includes everything except the monitor. It's the keyboard, it's the mouse, it's everything.
All in one.
And so, you know, if you're going to go with a Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 400, you can buy the full kit for $100. And like I said, it includes everything except, I think, it includes everything. You can upgrade it with a bigger micro SD card, or you can add external stuff. I mean, you can pimp it out.
Yeah, you can. It's endless.
Yeah, but in terms of actual purchase, for $100, the only thing you don't get is a monitor. That is it.
And like most folks still have today's TVs.
That's right.
I'll have HD, at least one HDMI.
That's right.
Or even if you had your TV was 6-7 years old, it's still going to have at least one HDMI port.
That's right. And so what I've seen is a lot of school districts who are buying Chromebooks are also looking at recommending Raspberry Pis for people who want a second machine or a different machine at home. You know, you can be. It's exactly what our caller was talking about. You can have a machine at home for $100 and a monitor, like we said, every TV sold in the last 10 years has an HDMI port, and it comes with an HDMI cable, so you don't even have to buy that. So you can pretty much hook it up to it comes with the 1.8 gigahertz 64-bit quad core ARM V8 CPU. It comes with 4 gig of RAM. It comes with a 16 gig SD card, but you can obviously, you know, get a bigger SD or a second storage.
Yep.
It comes with a mouse. It comes with a 3-foot HDMI to micro HDMI. The Raspberry Pi 400 itself takes micro HDMI, but the regular TV would take regular HDMI.
Yep.
And it comes with that cable, and it's all housed inside a keyboard. So the only thing you're missing is the monitor. It comes with the keyboard, the mouse, the cables, the power supply. It comes with a book on how to use it, and which you don't get from anything anymore, ever.
And you're
good to go, and it's $100. It makes a great gift for the person who's looking to learn, to play, or just needs a second computer.
One thing, though, I can safely say.
You may safely say it.
We are not going to be held responsible if you start working on it and lose track of time.
Right.
Because if you're sleepy...
Oh, unlike somebody who once blamed me for that exact situation.
That's why
Dad forgot to go to bed again.
That's why I'm making the disclaimer right up front.
Yeah, we've talked about
this. Because I'm guilty here.
You sure are. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is William, calling all the way up from Hampton, Virginia. Talk loud, William.
Hey.
How's it going?
Super Saturday to you guys. It's going great. Super Saturday to you.
Super Saturday to you, too.
Hey, listen, I was that conversation about the hard drives got my attention, and I just wanted to kick out my own personal observation regarding that. I don't know what the command is in Windows, but the command in Linux is lsblk.
Right.
And when you do that, it lists your partitions, and one of those partitions is boot EFI, and I think it's also your swap memory too. So I just wanted to kick that out there.
No, thank you. LS is the list command in Linux. BLK is the block devices, which are the hard drives and all of that stuff. So LSBLK, all one word, means list all the block devices. And William is exactly right. It'll show you all your drives and all your partitions. And you can see the partitions, but over on the left, you can also see what drive they're on.
Yeah.
And you'll be amazed at the number of partitions on a single drive. So as Dave was saying earlier, if you have multiple partitions on a single drive, it's still all one drive. And when that drive goes, all the partitions go. Perfect, William. Thank you.
And on the Mac, it's DF for disk format, disk file, space, minus H. Capital H if you want gigabytes, and lowercase h if you want gibabytes.
And DF-H also works on a Linux.
Linux, yeah. But the problem there is for a novice user, it isn't easy to tell the difference between a partition and a drive.
Well, in Windows, you can go into the control manager and...
device manager.
Huh?
Device manager.
Device manager. Yeah. And look, and there's a device... it'll show you over in a window... the actual physical drives that are there.
Right.
Drive 0, drive 1, drive 2. And quite often, say drive 0, you'll see it blocked off as C, D. And if you had to have a second drive, it might be E and F.
Yeah, on the Mac, there's the disk utility, which is the GUI interface for the disks. And it will show you the disks and the partitions to let you see how many disks you have in your computer. Right. Pretty much any computer these days, one disk is common. Any more than one is not that common.
Well, because they're so big. You know, I mean, you can get, one and two terabyte hard drives are very common now as standard in a machine. So they're figured, folks won't need more than that.
Right.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Enjoy your day, fellas.
You
Excellent.
Too.
Thanks. You too. Yeah, it's... there are ways to do that stuff. In Windows, it's almost always going to be a GUI way
to do it.
It's
probably a command line version.
It probably is something, but in Linux, which was originally command line only, and the Mach kernel underneath the Mac is the same. So that's why you can get those easily there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, I was just sort of was curious. When you try to tether your mobile phone to your car, my understanding is that's a pretty wide open area for hackers. I didn't know if there's anything you could do to protect yourself in a situation like that when you use it, for example.
Most of the time, the cars I've seen, they'll ask if you want to integrate your contacts, and you say no. The advantage is you can say call mom, and it knows your contact list and will call. But it also means all of your contacts go into the computer in the car, which can be accessed remotely by a lot of people.
Right. So you have the choice of making them quasi-public or not.
Yeah.
So if you're just trying to play your music on the car's entertainment system, you can usually just set up to transfer music only and not anything else about the phone.
Right, because it'll give you, when you scroll through that, it'll ask you for permission to get into your call. So you just say no, but it would still function.
Right.
Is that cool?
Right. As Steve said, you can't say call mom.
You'd have to say call 585-1112.
Right.
Right, I got you. Okay. Hey, I was concerned because there's a lot of, the more you get into it, there's more articles on the web and on YouTube, blah, 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 and it's pretty dangerous, I guess. I can sneak in there somewhere and get any of your data.
A lot of cars have cell phones in them for the GPS data and for, like, OnStar vehicle service, and there have been demonstrations of people getting into a car from that cell phone and being able to take over the car's entertainment system and even performance system, so you can control the throttle and the steering adjust, all those things on the that the computers can control. And the fact that those systems are not separated in the car is horrible.
Yeah, it really is the dumbest thing on the planet. All right, we have to take a break. Thank you. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. Before I forget, there will not be a lounge meeting tomorrow night. My in-laws are in from town, and if I sneak upstairs for an hour, I will be sleeping in the futon on the porch with no blanket. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We had a questioner during the break who asked, they have an Asus laptop. It's reached end of life. They want to put Neverware on it, but it only has 2 gig of RAM. Can you still do that? Technically,
yes
you can. But there's more to it than that. You do need a minimum of 2 gig to install it. You need 16 gig or more of storage space. But the problem is it a certified model?
Yeah.
Now, if you go to the Neverware website, you'll see a link to a list of supported devices. There are 9 Asus models that are supported. If it's not supported, it may work, but you may not get, say, Wi-Fi, or you may not get some other small feature.
There could be consequences.
There could be consequences. But it certainly can't hurt to give it a try.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained on that, especially if it's end of life.
Right. What we don't know is if it's an Asus Chromebook or an Asus laptop. They said laptop, but could be Chromebook.
Yeah,
anyway,
what's on it? Yeah.
Right. Anyway, the point is it certainly can't hurt to give it a try. And if it doesn't work, you're not a lot worse off than if it did, than if it didn't work. But it certainly can't hurt to give it a try. You need 2 gig of RAM. Your machine has 2 gig of RAM, so you should be fine. As for the rest of you, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Like I said, there will be no lounge tomorrow night. Normally, as most of you know, we on Sunday nights we all meet in the Soundbites Lounge. But this week I cannot be there, and since I own the lounge, it's not going to be up. It's not going to be up. That's easy. So everybody gets a night off. Congratulations, Steve.
You just leave it running.
I could. That's dangerous. I'm sorry, but we're not going to be doing that. You've got a night with your family, so that'll be nice for everybody.
Well, it's the holidays, people, I'm sure.
That's right. Like I said, my in-laws are coming into town, and if I sneak upstairs for an hour,
you might be the outlaw.
I will be sleeping, like I said,
on the porch.
I'll be sleeping in the futon, which is on the porch, and without a blanket. So, yeah.
And that's not a screened-in porch, folks.
You know, it is not.
No, that's a wide open porch.
That's a wide open porch. Although maybe one of the barn cats will come and keep me company.
Good. Yeah, good.
That would be all right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. While you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, I'll read another news item. Chromebook cameras just learned some new... My Lord in heaven, I cannot talk today. Chromebook cameras just learned some new tricks as Google started pushing out Chrome OS 96 on Tuesday. That's 96. If you don't have it yet, don't call me and ask why you can't do this. It's because you haven't got the software yet. As detailed by a Google blog post, the update brings the ability to use your camera to scan images and convert them into PDFs or JPEGs. If your Chromebook has a webcam and a front-facing camera, like the HP Chromebook X2 does, you can use the feature with both cameras. open the camera app and select scan mode. Again, if you don't have scan mode, it's because you haven't had the upgrade yet. Don't bother to call us. When you hold out the document you want to scan in front of the camera, the edges will be automatically detected. You can share the resulting file through standard media like email. You can distribute the scanned document to other Chromebooks and Android devices via Nearby Share, which is similar to Apple's AirDrop. Nearby Share lets you quickly send data through Bluetooth, WebRTC, or peer-to-peer Wi-Fi. Google first brought Nearby Share to Chromebooks this June. I use Nearby Share to move things from my phone and between my phone and my Chromebook all the time. Google threw a bone to people who connect external cameras to their Chromebooks, too. Users can now use the operating system's pan-tilt-zoom feature with a virtual D-pad that lets you crop and angle your camera view exactly how you want it, and the device will remember your preferred settings across apps. Next year, Google will add the ability to turn short videos into GIFs. And yes, it's pronounced GIF. Get over yourself.
GIF-GIF.
It's GIF.
GIF-GIF.
Look, the guy who created it called it GIFs because he said, choosy users, choose GIFs. Respect the pun. There aren't that many good computer puns. Respect the pun. Yep. It's GIFs. Google also is currently beta testing a feature that lets you control the camera app, including opening it up, through Google Assistant, which would be kind of cool and also very dangerous. Chrome OS 96 brings further changes to the Google operating system that were not detailed in the blog post. The updated OS adds a way to toggle each app's notification settings, 9 to 5 Google. Instead of navigating to quick settings, you can now go to settings apps and flip a switch for your programs. Additionally, Chrome OS 96 lets you pick whether links open in-app or in the Chrome browser. And that's under opening supported links under manage your apps. Finally, the wallpaper app got a dedicated icon, so it's no longer relegated to the desktop's right-click menu. That's not a big deal. If you haven't got Chrome OS 96 yet, be patient. Are you liking the new features? Give us a call if you've got them. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Is that creamy or chunky?
It is. Yeah, exactly. One thing you have to remember is that Chromebooks work a lot like phones. Pixel phones and Pixel, back when there were Pixel books, got updates immediately because they're owned by Google. But, as we all know, when you have a third party laptop, like I have an Asus laptop, Asus Chromebook, Asus has to get the files from Google. Then they have to massage them for their own purposes, and then they send out the update. Remember, the big dog has to be the last one to mark the tree. So whoever gets, you know, wherever that has to come through before it gets to you can take time. I immediately went to update my Chromebooks. I have an Asus and an HP, and neither one of them updated yet. But I know that a couple machines did update, and so a couple of models. So if you haven't got yours yet, be calm. You'll get there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm going to miss the lounge tomorrow.
Well, no, you're not. There isn't going to be one. I just announced that.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to miss it.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you.
Anyway, yeah. So I've got a MacBook Air, and it's running 10.14 Mojave, and I want to update it to the latest version of the OS, and I got a message saying that there wasn't enough room on the hard drive. is the hard drive replaceable on a 2018 MacBook Air? Is it easy to do?
No and no.
No, no, absolutely no.
And the 2017, it was a Blade NVMe drive. It wasn't a standard SATA drive, but it was at least replaceable
right
up until 2017. In 2018, they went to soldered drives.
Well, yeah. That sucks.
Yeah.
It makes it easier to manufacture. Makes it easier to repair, because if anything goes wrong, you replace the whole motherboard.
That's exactly right.
Easy, not cheaper to repair, easier to repair.
But there's a separate issue here, which is what's taking up all the space on the hard drive.
Right.
Okay, so I could eliminate some of the crap that's on the hard drive, but then still be limited to the space of 120, 128, or whatever's on there.
Yeah, that's an awful small drive to begin with, and it's very easy to fill it up with not a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, and if the OS takes up like a third of it.
Yeah, about 20 gigs for the OS and the pre-installed apps. Part of the problem is that the OS installer is about 15 gigs, and then it needs about 20 gigs, 25 gigs free to install onto. So you need about 40 gigs free if you're installing it from the drive that the installer's downloaded it onto. If you can boot a different drive and run the install from that, then it doesn't need as much free space on the...
Can you run the install from an SSD?
From any external drive, yeah.
So he could download the installer, move it to an SSD.
It has to be an bootable external drive, but yes.
Right.
Okay, there's no USB port on this puppy.
There should be two of them.
Are they hiding?
They're on the left-hand side, I think.
Oh, they're...
USB Type-C and Thunderbolt 3.
Type-C, okay, so... I guess I need to get a converter to convert my.
Well, the other thing, right? You're gonna need a converter to connect to your SSD card, your thumb drive.
Yeah.
But once you've done that, take a look at what's on the drive. If there's a bunch of stuff, and of course, talk to the person who owns the machine. If there's a bunch of stuff in the trash, can you just delete it? If there's a bunch of stuff, a bunch of documents. Maybe you can move them off to a thumb drive and then put them back when you're done.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of ways to get space, to free up space for the upgrade. And you need about, 60 gig to be safe.
Yeah.
Free. So if you can remove 60 gigs worth of stuff onto an SSD, and of course, as you know, back it up twice. Just to be safe, but if you can free up 60 gig of space, you should be able to do the upgrade right in place without a problem.
Okay. To create a bootable Mac flash drive, is there a program or something to do that? Or
the easiest thing is to install an OS on it. There are some terminal commands that will take the installer and make a bootable drive, but the easiest thing is just install the OS on that drive.
So if you've got a 256 gig thumb drive,
yeah,
or 512.
Or, 64 would be enough, but then you won't have much space to do anything else.
Right.
All right. Well, you're giving me some ideas.
There you go.
I appreciate the expertise. You guys have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Of course, to me, the easiest is to back up all the data onto a couple of thumb drives because you always want to back up the data anyway when you're doing an upgrade.
Yeah.
And that means you've got two backups. Then you do, wipe them off the drive once you've got two good backups.
Yep. Then you can erase the drive, install a clean OS, and copy your stuff back.
Copy your stuff back. It's the safest way to do it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter, what's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. On our desktop, we are running MX Linux 19, and MX Linux has come out with version 21. I'm getting lazy in my old age because that means I'd have to do basically a fresh install because I see nothing that indicates that they're going to treat MX-19 like a long-term support because it's based on Debian 10. And no indication even Debian 10 will be treated like a long-term support. What I'm thinking of doing is if I'm going to have to do a fresh install, I'd like to consider using a rolling distribution such as Sparky Linux, which is also based on Debian, but again, it's rolling. Can you give me some comments of pros and cons of turning to a rolling distribution?
Yeah, okay, so the difference is this. There are LTS, long-term support versions of Linux, usually are supported for 5 years.
Right.
And what that means is you get security updates and stuff like that, but a lot of the cutting edge features of new versions of things don't come to you.
Right.
So if what you want is a stable desktop every day, you go with a long-term support version.
Right.
If what you want is the cutting edge stuff, the coolest stuff, the new hotness, the sexy things, then you go with a rolling upgrade, which means that you get the latest of everything, but some things may not work perfectly.
Yeah.
So you make that decision on your own. And you can upgrade from is 21 also a long-term support? No, it shouldn't be.
It may be. It's kind of giving a hint that is, because I'm going to the site and people are talking, okay, it's going to be good until 2027.
Yeah, it probably
is.
It's not official. Right. But if you're looking at replacing your version of Linux, then of course, you're back down to make sure you've got two good backups and then just install the new version, wipe the drive clean.
Yeah.
That is the safest way to do it. Make sure you've got two good backups first.
Yeah. But let me ask you this, too. When it comes to these rolling distributions, do you think on occasion you have to go ahead and do a clean install again?
Sometimes.
Yeah, because they'll be changed. Like, I'm worried about going with the Debian. Like I said, Sparky, because it's going to be based on Debian 11. Well, right now, Debian, you know, you look at the calendar and there's Debian 13 or whatever else is going to be coming down maybe in about another 3 years.
Right.
And that may be requiring me for another fresh install, would you think?
It might, but the theory is not.
Yeah.
Some people do a fresh install every year just to keep things clean.
Just to keep things clean. But the idea here is you're moving from MX Linux to a different version of Linux, right?
Right. Yeah.
So that requires a fresh install.
Right. That's why I'm saying I'm getting lazy. Well, might as well stick with a rolling. And if it keeps just improving year after year, I don't have to worry come 3 years or five
right.
years that it'll still be freshing up. Even the kernel may be installed, you know, a new kernel that's going to be improved. Why
right.
not go that way?
Well, you have to understand, if you have an LTS version, you can still do a distribution upgrade, dist-upgrade. Sudo apt install dist dash sudo apt dash space dist dash upgrade, and that upgrades your distribution to the next version. So even with long term support version, you do not have to wipe out the drive to upgrade.
Okay, because I saw though on MX-19, they're telling how to go to 21. It's much harder than what you just put down through the command line. I mean, it had multiple commands
right.
to go through, and it's like, I'm not interested in going that path. I think I'll do a fresh install. It's
right.
a lot easier on me.
MX Linux I can't say it's not Linux, but they've done things.
Right.
They've done things. Horrible things.
So who is MX and why did they change this?
Right. For example, I use Ubuntu.
Yep.
And if I want to move from one distribution to another, I just type sudo apt dist-upgrade. And I'm done. Well, and then I sweat for a couple of minutes, and then I'm done.
It uses anti-X. What's wrong with X that they have to use anti-X?
They're using anti-X.
It's antics. Antics, they say.
Right. That's a decision that MX Linux made.
Yeah.
So if you were using a different version of Linux, going from distribution to distribution to distribution is really nothing more than that one command line.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking of going back to Ubuntu because of that ease that we experienced years ago. But when I did that, what turned me away is that we like XFCS desktop, and when I had that and when I upgraded, it just basically closely destroyed the desktop. It just took minutes, I mean, a long time to reboot I had other issues, so
interesting.
That's why I turned to MX. It was easy then. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. MX-19 to MX-21, because of the change in the base from Debian 10, which was Buster, to Debian 11, which is Bullseye, there is no official upgrade option. You do have to – the best way to do it is reinstall.
Yeah. Okay, marvelous. You've given me a lot to think about. I may be switching back to Ubuntu because of, you said, the easy command line stuff, which people have commented about.
Yeah.
That it's so much easier. Why doesn't MX do like Ubuntu and others?
Yep, okay. I get it.
Yeah, great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
For those of you who are already confused, Debian is a version, a distribution of Linux, and many, many, many systems are based on it. Debian 10 was called Buster. All of the Debian versions are named after Toy Story characters. Buster was the dog, the dachshund. The slinky dog was Buster. And 11 is Bullseye. That was Woody and Jesse's horse for version 11. But they made so many changes that they recommend you reinstall from scratch because of all the changes that they made. And so far we haven't seen that with things like Ubuntu or others based on Ubuntu. So while MX Linux is a very nice version, this particular upgrade we had a bit of a gotcha. That's how that works.
And some people just don't want to change their OSs.
No, they don't. And I get that. I do. I was thinking the other day about, like I said, I have a laptop that died. I think it's actually the hard drive that's finally failed. Speaking of hard drives. But I will play with it this afternoon and see what I can do with it. But I really had a moment where I thought, if this was my main desktop, I would just go get a cabin in the woods and hell with all of it. I don't want to have to deal with it, at least not today. So, yeah, I get that. All right, let me read another. You had a thing. No, let me read another email, another, what do you call these, news stories. According to a news report in Bloomberg, Apple has told suppliers that demand for the iPhone 13 line of smartphones may fall short of the company's original expectations amid supply constraints. Apple planned to ship 90 million iPhone 13, iPhone 13 mini, iPhone 13 Pro, or iPhone 13 Pro Max devices to consumers, but the company cut its production targets by 10 million phones due to parts shortage. Now, for anybody else, 10 million would be a lot of cut. For Apple,
it's a throw in the bucket.
It's a little over a tenth, 1.2, about 12%. Consumers, meanwhile, have faced wait times on their iPhone 13 orders of 2, 3, or even 4 weeks since the phone's September launch. Apple initially told vendors it would make up that 10 million units again in early 2022 once supply improved. But according to the Bloomberg report, Apple has noticed weakening demand, and the company no longer intends to hit that 90 million target in that time frame. The demand shortfall could be attributed to any number of things and maybe hard to definitively explain. On one hand, it's possible that consumers saw the iPhone 13 as an inadequately major update over last year's iPhone 12. There are those who must have the newest iPhone day one.
And there's a special program for them where they get the new one every year.
Yeah, exactly. But there are a lot of people who don't. Are you okay, Dave? You gonna live?
I don't know.
Okay. It swallowed, then breathe. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, I had it
backwards.
Well,
you got two pipes. Why can't you do both at the same
exactly
time?
Exactly right.
And run the board.
The iPhone 12 sold like hotcakes in what the business world calls a super cycle, a product launch window in which some factor or another, like new features or external economic forces, drive consumers to upgrade in greater numbers than usual. The iPhone 13 offered marked battery and camera and battery life improvements over the iPhone 12, but little else. On the other hand, the shortfall could also be because customers have decided an iPhone 13 is not worth the effort to obtain, given the long waits.
And the price.
Apple people don't care about price. Or perhaps they've read rumors that next year's model is expected to be a major redesign with substantial new features. Economic factors like new COVID-19 variants, inflation, and more might also contribute. All that said, Apple is still on track for a strong quarter. It just might not be as huge as the company and its shareholders hoped, since the iPhone accounts for about half of the company's revenue. And the iPhone 13 is getting easier to track down in some but not all markets. In some parts of the U.S., for example, some configurations are now delivering within a week or so, and phones are sometimes available for in-store pickup. Little is known for sure about next year's flagship iPhone, but some leaks and reports have said it will have a major new design, and it may drop the charging port entirely. They've also said that Apple is unlikely to continue offering the mini version of the iPhone, as it has consistently fallen short of expectations as consumers have flocked to bigger and bigger screens. Size matters, apparently, for Apple people. So are you longing for an iPhone 13 or are you planning to wait? Give us a call, 585. No, don't give us a call. It's we only have a minute left.
You've been on hold a long time.
You've been on hold.
Yeah. No,
166 hours.
Yeah.
But this is what we've been saying, and it's just not the Apple products.
Right.
It's on the Google. It's on the Android. There are no really great features. Granted, Apple made a few improvements to the camera and the phone. And folks are going, oh, you know, it's nothing that's, oh, I got to have this. That they're standing in line before the store even opens up. You know, it's the latest, hottest, greatest thing. You know, granted, they're pushing, you know, oh, you get this free iPhone with it, and they got to upgrade to G5, which means, oh, yeah, you're getting a free phone, but you're also paying for now, instead of, you know, the 5 service instead of the 4, which is more money out of your pocket, plus what you're paying for the phone.
That's messing up the loaner process, too. When you bring a phone under warranty in for service, if it's going to take more than a couple of days, Apple has a loaner program where they loan you a phone. Well, we can swap SIM cards, and your phone number moves to the loaner phone. But if you've got a 5G phone, the loaners are only 4G, and it doesn't work. So you're going to you have to
it
get
won't, it. Won't drop go. Down?
Nope.
My phone does.
No, we haven't seen any of the phones do that. No, the phone itself, 5G phone will drop to 4G.
Right.
But a 5G SIM won't work in a 4G phone.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yes, yes.
So you have to go to your carrier, get a new SIM. Then we get your real phone back, you got to go back and get another new SIM.
Right.
Pain.
All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank every single person who called in. Who am I? Well, I'm Nick Francesco. And we want to thank you all for having been a part of this show. Listen, make sure you're doing your backups. You know, we've talked about it enough today. The cost of replacing hard drives, both in time and money, and hard drives die. Do your backups. Make sure you have at least 2 of them. Don't mess around with this nonsense. Do it today. Do it now. You're sitting there at home. Do it. And then we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you? We'll see you in just 166 hours.